Hello, and welcome to the Warlord Spotlight on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the Warlord series from DC Comics. In this Warlord Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Warlord number 63 to 66. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing all right. Now, we've got four issues here. Three of them had a backup feature. One of them had an extra feature in it. It wasn't one of the bonus books that they were doing at that time, but it was a free preview, 16-page preview, and they would do this periodically. I'm trying to remember. I think these were usually just put into a comic versus the entire line. But this was a period with DC where there was every once in a while you'd get some really good value for your money in terms of the amount of pages and story and stuff.
Yeah, I was surprised how much material was in here. Like, we talked a little bit beforehand. I was pressed for time, so I didn't go in depth in the backup stories. Mm-hmm. But this was a pretty, what I quote-unquote, thick book, because you got the Masters of the Universe, the Barren Earth, along with the whole Warlord story. It's a lot of bang for your buck.
I think it was 17 pages for Warlord, 7 this time for Barren Earth, although normally it's 6, and then 16 for the He-Man stuff.
Yeah, that's a pretty meaty book.
Yeah. So, and good creators all the way around, in my opinion.
Yeah, and they didn't charge anything extra, so these were like free add-ons. I feel like if they would have done this today, it would have been a dollar or two more.
Well, again, the bonus book stuff and the free previews of upcoming titles and whatnot, they usually did those for free just to entice you to get the other book. And what's different than today is it's new material, not just like the first 16 pages or whatever of the comic that'll come out next month.
Correct.
So I wish they would do this kind of stuff more often these days, or, well, at all these days.
Yes. Sometimes we get a preview of a comic that's already been solicited and maybe it comes out that month or the next month. But I would say this is something different. And I think this is something a little bit more meaningful.
Well, and often these days, when they do it, and by these days, I mean the last few years, they'll basically spam it into an entire week's worth of book or half the lineup or whatever. So it's like, here's the same 6 pages or whatever of whatever they're trying to force down our throats.
Yep. It feels robotic at that point. You're like, okay. I seen it. I've seen this page again.
Which, if you think about it, the He-Man stuff is certainly different than Warlord, but it's close enough.
I mean, yeah, it's a guy with a sword and there's magical stuff that happens, yeah.
Yeah, at a high level, it makes sense to put it in this book.
Yeah, it does make sense. It's of this ilk, even though it's not the same.
Yeah, and same with the Barren Earth stuff.
Correct.
It's not identical by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a little bit of that sci-fi fantasy sword and sandal type stuff that it doesn't feel out of place in this book.
I agree. Yep.
Should we talk about the Warlord story?
Yeah, that works. It was called the Cash Ban or Cosban? I don't know.
I went with Cash Ban because you want to ban cash, I guess. I don't know.
I'm like, is this supposed to be like a thing on the Morocco, the Cospa, but it's Cosban? I don't know. Cash Ban is what I call it.
We've got Travis and McCullough, the werewolf guy, heading off to visit Jennifer to see if she can cure him. They decide to swing by Kambuka, which is Ashir's kingdom where Shakira had stayed. And the cash ban thing is apparently there's this group of animal whisperers, essentially.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. It gave Shakira a big in and also our werewolf friend a big in for this story.
Yeah, I enjoyed seeing Shakira back.
Me too. I really like her.
I would have liked to have seen a little more of Ashir, but I liked what we got. I liked kind of the description of what had happened with Shakira after Travis had left Kambuka. That was kind of fun. And then we get this whole group of people who are quasi, I don't want to say gypsies or whatever, but a traveling group. They can talk to animals. They help people figure out what's wrong with their animals and how to fix it and all that kind of a stuff. And then they've got kind of designs, it seems like, on Mikala. And this is where these issues that we're talking about this time feel more modern in some respects than almost the classical storytelling style, because it literally ends with one of the characters vanishing, and it says continued in Warlord number 64. It's a very clear, hey, we know we're not telling a done-in-one story. This is going to continue in the next time. We're going to flat out tell you that so you don't flip the page wondering what the hell happened. I got mixed feelings on that. It's not a problem, but it is a little different.
Yeah, it's different, and I still like Warlord, and I still love comics of this era, but the comics that were kind of like the Done in One type thing are what I'm the most fond of,
mm-hmm.
and what I like the most and I'm the most nostalgic for, because when I was a kid, the first comics I read, I picked up the thing and it was a story, and there was no like, wait for this, you know? There might have been something that happened real big at the end, but now we're moving on to, like you said, the more modern era where we're going to take these episodic tales and it's going to take months to tell. And I understand it. I am okay with it. I'm more nostalgic for what we had before.
What's interesting is what they start here, or arguably started last issue as a prologue almost.
Yep.
But really fully started here. It plays out through issue 66. So we get lucky. We get the whole thing in what we're talking about tonight.
Yep.
And I know some people is, oh, they wrote it for the trade. It's like, no, they absolutely did not.
Yep.
Trades did not exist at this point.
Correct. Correct. And I would say this is the era of the footnote, and the writer had to catch you up or jog your memory a little bit in the next issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a good job of that being done here. But yeah, this was not written for the trade. This is the expanded storyline. We're going to take 3-4 issues. And is that because it's more difficult to come up with new stuff when you can play this story out over several issues and give it more breadth and more depth? I don't know. Maybe. Could be.
Well, given where they're going with this and the whole battle with the evil one and stuff that they had set up a while back is coming, I think we would have been let down if we had just gotten to an issue. Boom, he shows up, they fight him, they defeat him, they're done, that's it.
And you know what? I agree with you there. I would say this gives a little more depth and a little more impact to the big bad character and the story itself.
Yeah. I appreciated, though, that it felt like something actually happened this issue, whereas I felt we got a lot more talking heads in kind of the past arc with the imposter.
This worked much better for me than the last story. I enjoyed this, and I loved all the characters we got to see here.
And we had Dan Jurgens on the art.
It worked.
I think he did a great job. Very talented guy, both artist and later writer. He's going to be the regular artist for the Warlord feature, except for issue 79, which is done by Pat Broderick. Jurgens will be on until issue 88, and then he's going to come back for issue 91.
Okay, cool. And I enjoy his art, so I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, I love his art. Great stuff. Great stuff. So I thought this was a good story, some interesting stuff. I appreciated getting Shakira back into the mix.
I agree. And just an aside, a weird, you know, tangent here. I wish I had the skill of these people talking to animals, because so many times something's wrong with your animal, your cat, your dog, whatever. Hey, you don't know what's wrong to it. You got to take it to the vet. They hate it. They don't want to go to the vet. And it would be much better if they could tell you what was wrong with them. So I appreciate that these people can almost communicate with the animals and have like this telepathy with them, or this ESP or whatever. I don't know what it is.
Don't you think that would really mess with your worldview?
Oh, yeah, it definitely would.
I think there's signs that animals, they do things, have behaviors, make decisions, that kind of a thing, to some degree. So to know that they are actually intelligent beings somewhere on that scale, and that we're keeping them captive in many cases, literally treating them like pets.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know, seems the ethics of the situation would get a lot more confusing at that point.
A lot more vegetarians, I think.
I would hope.
Yeah, I would hope so. Otherwise, we are really disturbing people.
Yeah. Now, did you read the Barren Earth backup feature?
I did. I did enjoy it, but I was strapped for time, so I just kind of read it really quick. I didn't spend a ton of time in it.
And I think that's fair. It's only, in this case, I think 7 pages. Normally, it's 6. And what got me was, man, how much are they packing into those couple of pages?
A ton happened in there.
I mean, in this one, we find out we're at some point in the future. There's a ship coming back to Earth after, I guess, 2,000 years. Mankind has been at war with this alien race for like 5,000 years. The war had been in this sector. It had gone around. Now it's kind of circling back. So they're trying to, can we reuse some of the stuff we'd left here? The ship gets into bad shape because it gets into a battle with one of these alien, I don't know if it's just a droid or a ship or whatever. An escape pod crashes down to Earth. There seems to only be 5 survivors. And they realize this green, lush planet they left, well, it's kind of burnt to a husk to a degree because, well, the sun's gotten bigger, it's a lot hotter, so it's literally a barren desert Earth.
Yeah.
End part one. And I'm like, wow, this was a very fun kind of space adventure prologue to what seems to be a survive on a, I don't want to say post-apocalyptic world, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it had that feeling. And so I enjoyed that aspect of it. I thought it's a really cool setup.
Yeah. Now, it was written by Gary Kahn, art by Ron Randall. We're going to have that same creative team for all 23 installments that cover a total of 139 pages of this backup feature.
Wow.
And if you like it enough, there's a four-issue Conqueror of the Barren Earth miniseries that runs a total of 100 pages, 25 apiece, that kind of finishes it off.
That's crazy that the miniseries was less dense than the backup features in Warlord. I mean, the less material. That's crazy.
Well, yeah. I mean, 23 installments, 139 pages. Again, it's like six apiece. And that's, what, three-fifths almost of the material thereabouts?
Yeah.
Because then the four issues is 100 pages?
That's, wow, that's amazing. It didn't live long on its own, but it was finished off. There it is.
Well, it was meant to be a four-issue miniseries.
Okay. All right, cool. It's not like something that didn't survive. It wasn't popular.
Right, right. It's like, hey, we've had this go. I mean, 23 installments for a backup feature, particularly in Warlord,
is a lot.
Pretty good. And it kind of went away because backups were going away.
Ah, okay, okay. You know what? I'm going to go back and probably reread it again because I was really pressed for time, and definitely take it in, see how it sits with me instead of just skimming it.
Yeah, please do that. I'd like to hear what you think if you give it a kind of a proper read versus just kind of a quick skim or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I definitely will. That's going to be done.
Cool. Now, did you even take a look at the He-Man feature?
No, I did not. That was part of that press for time. I'm like, okay, He-Man, I'm skipping this. All right.
I can understand that. There are times where if this was just one of the books I was getting every month, I probably would have too or whatever. But Paul Kupperberg wrote it. Kurt Swan did the art. So good creative team.
Definitely.
The story involves Superman, and this takes place between DC Comics Presents 47, where Superman had met He-Man, had been on Eternia, and all of that. So when he winds up back on Eternia, he recognizes it. And then this kind of sets the stage for the Masters of the Universe number one that would be coming out the following month.
Ah, okay.
Again, I felt in the 16 pages, they covered quite a bit of ground. Kupperberg is a very talented writer. And then again, Kurt Swan on the art, particularly anything that's got Superman in it, Kurt Swan's awesome. But his material, his style fits He-Man and those characters pretty well, too.
Yeah, and the art here is definitely really decent.
Yeah. So three features in one issue for 60 cents by, I think, some very talented creators. I think it's hard to go wrong with that.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm going to go off on another tangent. When they collect this in omnibus format, I bet you they won't include this backup material, but I kind of wish they would. It's something that they could put on as almost like bonus material, because they do that every now and then for omnibus editions. So when they do come out with the Warlord, I'm curious to see if they keep any of it or if it's all scrapped.
I would imagine they would not include any of it, but I would think for something like Barren Earth,
yeah,
do it as a trade.
I would like to read it. Yeah, give me something.
And you're talking 240 pages of material. That's like the perfect size for a trade.
It's a lot of stuff, and they could package it, yeah, with the miniseries with all these backups, and hey, here it is. Dive back into the, I guess it's the 80s by this time.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be interesting how they package it up and if this breathes any life into these other properties that were backup features or not.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, should we dive into Warlord 64?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
Now, at the end of the Warlord feature, we had seen Amicala vanish through... To me, it looked like he was, like, teleporting away, but it seemed like he'd gone through a portal because Travis is like, I recognize what's on the other side of that.
Yeah. When I first saw it at the end of the book, I thought he was disappearing. But like you said, the way it was drawn, it wasn't explained. But now we see it's the portal. And Shakira literally grabs Travis because he's swinging on a rope headed to go into the portal to save his friend.
Yeah, he's realizing what's on the other side of that is the Age of the Wizards he'd been to before. So he's like, I'm going to dive through there. And I'm like, wow, that's insane. They get split up going through there. And we follow mainly Shakira as she lands where Amicala is.
Exactly.
And in classic Skartaris fashion, now granted, we're back in the Age of the Wizards, it's kind of a pre-Skartaris, but a page or two later, boom, there's a dragon flying overhead attacking them, because things happen.
Exactly. A huge battle with this dragon, which it played out pretty fun, and it felt kind of like, an homage to the earlier stuff we'd seen in Warlord.
Yeah.
With the dinosaurs or whatever the creature of the day was.
I still think we would have had a more exciting kind of splash with the dragon and stuff like that if it had been Grell versus Jurgens.
I agree.
Jurgens is doing good, but this is early in his career, I think.
Exactly. Grell always did that splash page, and we have it here, but it would have been something with the dragon or something like that. It would have been set up a little bit different, I think. I don't know.
I think it would have happened a few pages earlier, and it might have been the title splash versus Travis kind of swinging towards the portal.
Yeah, exactly. They would have shown that and then say, oh, here's how this happened.
Yeah.
Somehow, like a flash forward and then flashback to current.
It's evocative of early Warlord, but it's not that it misses the mark. It's just that Grell was a master.
Exactly. Grell was the master.
So we get some fun stuff. They meet up with a centaur, and he's going to hang around for at least another issue or two. And we really kind of get them situated. And again, at this point, I mean, it's the Warlord's book, but we're not following the Warlord.
Yeah. I think his name was like Aaron Shadowstorm, the centaur guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, the Warlord's gone. It feels like reading the backup of any one of those stories where we're watching Machiste and Mariah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were off in this world that we're watching now.
Yeah, because they're in the Wizard World era. And we do catch back up with Travis. It turns out he was spit out of the portal. He's stuck in kind of, quote-unquote, present-day Skartaris. And I always put quotes around that because it's a timeless tale and time works funny there. And one of the group of animal whisperers or whatever, which is who had created the portal, sent Mikola back and stuff, explains that we don't know what he's going to do. We just know he had to go. And they give Travis this, or at least show him this medallion that has Mikola on it, kind of there's something he must do back in the past.
Exactly. And looking at it, you just can tell it's some characters on a gold medallion. But later on, when you see what's to come, you realize who the characters are and what it's setting up. And you're like, oh, okay, this makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. It's some fun stuff. And this is another issue that ends flat out with Be Continued in Warlord number 65, the next issue.
Exactly. Yep.
So we get enough in here to have a satisfying read, but they're reminding us this is part of a longer story.
Yeah. Now, did you like the Barren Earth?
Man, the Barren Earth in this one, I think it was a little... Some of the writing reminded me of something that Grell might have done. If we've got this long shot of they've crashed their shuttle, it's like, yeah, we've got to get to that base we saw as we came down. We'll head off in this direction, and we can see them heading kind of towards us, and in the background is the base they're heading towards.
Yep.
They've completely gone in the wrong direction. At this point, there's, I don't know, five of them, it says, and this is how I imagine space to be like, because we finally get the names of some of the people, and they're walking around, there's a sandstorm, that almost takes them out. One of them gets taken out by this creature under the sand that kind of pulls them under, and then another one goes down. And then they get back to the shuttle because they were walking in the wrong direction, circled back to it unintentionally, only to find out, one, in the meanwhile, another group has looted the shuttle. It's a hollow shell at this point. They took anything that wasn't firmly bolted down. A hermit crab-like thing has taken residence in it and goes and kills another one of their guys. So at this point, we're down to two people who happen to be a couple, and they stumble across a tree that's like a snake or whatever. I couldn't tell what it was, but it had like a Venus flytrap kind of a thing almost. And it starts chewing into the one guy. So out of this entire expedition that came back to Earth to go see if they could find these bases and use them to fight the enemy, we're down to one, maybe two people surviving. And what's going to be our lead character here of Jin, she's surrounded by these guys riding on giant lizards.
Yeah, the barren Earth is getting way more barren very quickly.
Way more barren and crazy dangerous. So it definitely fits in with the expect the unexpected like Skartaris. But I'm like, you establish we've got a group of five just so you can whittle it down to one. That's brutal.
Oh, yeah.
So I was enjoying this. I thought it was a lot of fun. And again, they do all of this in six pages.
Yeah. And as a preview for our next Warlord Spotlight, I am rereading all this Barren Earth stuff because I browsed it really quick. And it looks like a ton of fun. And I like the concept. And it looks like something that's going to be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like I was reading it really quick. Like I said, press for time. Bad week.
Nope. Understandable. That happens. And given the track record of the backup features, I don't blame you for skimming.
Yeah, a lot of them were not good. It's like, I figured this would be another bad one. I was like, huh, this is kind of interesting. I got to revisit this.
Yeah, I was enjoying this. I thought it was a ton of fun.
Cool.
All right. Warlord number 65.
All right, 65.
Now, this one has some fun stuff. Travis finally makes it to Jennifer's place, which is, of course, the castle of his archenemy. So as he's coming in, we've got this splash page of all the memories this is bringing back for Travis of, you know, when he killed his son and when Eitan died the last time they were there, when he left Jennifer there, all that kind of stuff. So definitely seemed like an emotional moment for him.
Oh, for sure. And Jennifer, the more you see her, just looks so much like the Sorceress Supreme, you know? I just look at her, I'm like, this is like Clea that we had for a period of time when she was the Sorceress Supreme.
Yeah.
This is her before she was her.
And page 5, we get this great splash page of her kind of floating, doing the magic stuff and whatnot. To me, that's kind of the classic look for Jennifer. When I think of her in the series, this is kind of the outfit, and she is not to be messed with. She definitely has the power to back up whatever she wants to do. So very much kind of the Sorcerer Supreme of Skartaris.
Exactly. I like her much more so than when she was just the daughter stumbling around looking for her dad.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's a person of impact, and she's a person who, in all rights, is more powerful than her dad.
Certainly in a magic sense, leaps and bounds more powerful.
Yeah, exactly. But overall, I'm more of a Travis Morgan type guy. He's the tough guy. I like him.
If I had to pick one to have in a fight?
It's Travis.
I don't know. I might go with her, because I mean, she's definitely going to win 9 times out of 10. But
snap her fingers and boom.
Travis might go down, but he'll sure as hell get back up.
That's true. That is true.
So I thought that was fun. And we don't know how long she's kind of been here versus how long Travis has been doing other stuff, because time is relative in Skartaris.
It's true. And I really like this, because her being brought in, they were going to be bringing Rostov, or he has different names.
Mikhail of Rostov,
to cure his lycanthropy, to see her. But now they're like, hey, on top of, you know, this thing I was looking at doing, now my friends are both missing. And she has the power to see what has happened and to almost help him out in these regards. It sets it up perfect, because he needs his daughter, because he, without her, he can't help his friends.
Yeah, well, and he's also worried about Rostov, because he knows Rostov came to Skartaris to find Mariah.
Yes.
Travis knows Mariah is back in the past, in the Age of the Wizard Kings and stuff, in Wizard World, with Machiste, and they've kind of fallen in love and stuff, so he's worried that this guy, Rostov, with his werewolf stuff, putting him a little kind of on the edge of control or whatnot, might completely lose it when he realizes that the love of his life he came back for has moved on.
Exactly, and Machiste is a excellent fighter and a tough guy himself, but against a werewolf, your odds aren't too good.
Yeah, yeah, that could go either way.
That's true. That would be a tough fight.
And I would agree, it favors the werewolf, but
Machiste's pretty tough.
It really comes down to whose side the writer's on.
Exactly.
So I enjoyed this issue. We get a little bit more with Mikhaila, Shakira, and Aaron. We get some stuff with Mariah, Machiste, and Mongo, because Aaron realizes that his two new friends of Mikhaila Rostov and Shakira, one wants to be cured of the werewolf stuff, one wants to get back to the future. He can't help them, but a wizard certainly can. But, yeah, it's a hard time for wizards right now, because the evil one keeps killing them, so I'll take you to the best guy around. He's not good, but he's the best, and that turns out to be Mongo, who we'd seen way back when, the last couple of times we were in this era.
Yeah, and Mongo, for some reason, reminds me of just a Saturday morning cartoon character. I don't know why, but he does.
I'm pretty sure it's a dead ringer for the one from the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon, but I could be wrong on that.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, it definitely looks like him.
So, he's bemoaning, though, that he's ninth in line of succession, but that's because everyone ahead of him keeps getting killed off, and there have been like 26 guys in that lead spot for a few moments in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, the life expectancy for a wizard in Wizard World is not very long.
Yeah, yeah. And then they realize somebody's coming into Mongo's tower, which, of course, is the group we were just following. But because they don't recognize the centaur, Shakira, or Rostov, they figure it must be somebody the evil one sent. So when the two groups meet, they fight.
Yeah, and the fight is on, and we see the fight happening, and the rioter has seemingly given Rostov the upper hand on Machiste, but he has his backup there, which helps.
Now, during this whole thing, I was trying to remember if Mariah and Machiste had ever met Shakira, but I think she came around after they had gone back in time to Wizard World.
I'm pretty sure they had not met. Yeah, she was a secondary character after they left.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think they had. So it was nice that they're all meeting for the first time right here. Boom.
Well, not all of them, but it takes Mariah a little bit to recognize Mikola, who was her fencing instructor.
It's true, yeah. And that was the distraction that Machiste needed to get a lick in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I thought it was clever that basically they're watching the fight through the mirror.
Travis and Jennifer, yeah.
Travis and Jennifer. And Travis is like almost in a rush to get there. Hey, we got to stop this fight. We got to help them. They're getting ready. Machiste's getting ready to kill the guy. But she's like, we can go back whatever time we choose. We don't need to be in a rush here. And I thought that was really kind of cool.
Well, the whole thing is Travis wanted to have them brought back to the current time in Skartaris. And Jennifer's like, no, we can't. There's things that have to be done back then. So they go there. And I love the whole walk through the mirror.
Yeah.
And again, this is another one. It doesn't flat out say go to the next issue, but it says next issue, Wizard World, pretty much letting us know the story is not done yet. Which, no big surprise, it was very clear it wasn't done yet.
Exactly.
But I think in the amount of dialogue that Jennifer and Travis have, there's more than enough time for Machiste to really splatter Rostov's brains across the floor there with his mace hand.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're going over into the fourth month on the story arc right now.
Yeah, but it's been reading pretty well. There's stuff happening every issue.
Yep.
So I wasn't upset with it continuing. It didn't feel like it was dragging on.
Much better than the last long-form story arc we had.
Absolutely. Now, we get another Baron Earth backup feature here. We find out who those people riding the lizards were. We find out that Jin's companion isn't dead, but those guys on the lizards quickly take care of that with the line of kind of implying he wasn't dead, but he was going to suffer, and better to die quickly than to suffer for a while.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whether that was truly the case or not, we may never know. But they realize she's of no value, so while she wants to go with them, they're going to leave her here, and they just kind of backhand her, knock her out, and leave. So, figuring Baron Earth, either she survives or she doesn't. Winds up against a group of other people. It turns out the first group was a reptilian race. This next group is humans. She probably was better off with the reptilians, because these humans, not so nice. She winds up having to fight them. She disarms one by, you know, removing his hand at the wrist, then kills him. And then out of the other, I don't know, seven or eight or whatever, she's got to fight them. And with her energy blade, makes pretty quick work of it. But again, she's well outnumbered. But there was an onlooker who takes a couple of shots, I guess with a rifle or something, and takes care of the rest of them, scaring a couple off. And then she meets this guy who's a human named Skinner. But again, six-page story, so about all she has time to do after meeting him and finding out he's not a threat is to faint. But again, a ton of stuff, quick action, just fast-paced, but not too fast. A lot of ground covered in six pages. I'm really curious, if they were to collect this whole thing into a single trade, how would the pacing feel with, for the first 139 or so pages, you're getting major story beats, big action turns, not cliffhanger, but a good turning point every six pages or so. Then you hit the 25-page issues.
And then it might feel decompressed at that point.
It might. I don't know. I remember enjoying the miniseries, but it's been 40 years since I've read it. So I can't imagine. Odds are it was written as a 25-page issue versus let's take four six-page things and cram them together. But it could have been written as four six-page installments they just did as a single issue. I don't know. I don't remember. But that's one where I could definitely see you get to about the halfway point and you're like, wow, the pacing really started to change.
Yeah. What's going on? Why'd they end like this?
But I'm enjoying this. It's fun. Again, you're not going to confuse this with The Warlord, but it definitely has the same kind of vibe and genre-ish aspects to it. So if you like one, I think you'd like the other.
Yeah. And I like that they keep the backups at least kind of in the same wheelhouse.
Yeah.
With all of them, whether we enjoyed them or not, they were kind of all belonged in Warlord as a backup.
I don't know so much about OMAC.
Yeah, OMAC did not. Yeah, I stand corrected on that.
But I definitely think Dragon Sword did, Claw did.
Yep.
Arion.
It was kind of, yeah.
It was. It should have fit better than I think it did.
Yeah, I agree.
That's where I come down on that one. All right, should we go to issue 66?
Yeah, let's do that, and we're going to get the finale of this story here. And this was like really getting pretty a lot of the characters, not all of the characters, but a ton of the big characters together, all in one big book.
Well, yeah, once we got Jennifer and Morgan getting to Mongo's place, we got those two. We got Mariah, Machiste, Rostov, Shakira, Mongo, and Aaron the Centaur. So we got a team of eight at this point.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff going on. What I really enjoyed was, one, no backup features, so we get the full 25 pages for the lead story.
Yep, I love that.
Shortly after everybody's in there, we get some quick introductions. So if you don't remember who some of these characters are, you get introduced to them, which I thought was a smart move. Keeps it very accessible for new readers. It jogs the memory of long-term readers.
Exactly, because some people haven't seen these characters for maybe a couple years or however long it's been.
Yeah, it's been a while since we left Mariah and Machiste back in the past.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So I thought that was pretty good. We also, when Mariah and Rostov go to talk, get a bit of his backstory. A lot of this we've known and seen, but we get kind of his perspective on it. And Mariah kind of letting him down of, yeah, whatever we had, it's over.
Exactly. Machiste's kind of looking in the background when they're having that talk. But yeah, it played out. It was like the emotional tones of that last long-form story, but it was done rather quickly. Boom. Mm-hmm. Okay. Over. Let's move on.
Well, and I like how Machiste is about to go all alpha male on Rostov, and Travis is like, hey, wait, we ought to stick together. We got this other guy to go fight.
Yeah, we got this evil one. What are we doing here? Let's not fight each other.
And then instead of Travis actually leading both the discussion and kind of the mission, if you will, Jennifer steps up and does it.
Yeah, which I liked it. She took a leading role in this, but it makes sense because of who the foe is.
Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what does he want? He wants gold. He wants power. Well, then he must be denied these things. And let's set a trap for him. And they decide for the bait, they're basically going to use the local sorcerers or what's left of them.
Exactly, because they love to be hunted by the evil one.
And I'll be honest, I wasn't crystal clear on exactly what the plan was, but there was this black pyramid. They were putting all of their gold in there, and it said that they were stealing it, but I think it was supposed to be sealing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a little bit off. Something wasn't there right there.
That would be an unfortunate typo. Not typo, because it was hand-lettered, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
But I love the minute this evil one shows up, all these little dwarf wizards are like, run away!
Yeah, they're all out of there.
Can't say I blame them. I mean, this guy is the evil one. He goes attacking this pyramid, no luck. But all of this seems to be a distraction, so the team of eight can go into his lair and go find this Book of the Dead that's powered him up that he had stolen the last time we were back in this time zone.
Exactly. And initially, the evil one seems to be having no problem with all eight of them, despite how powerful Jennifer or the other wizard is. I mean, they're basically put into almost like bubbles, you mm-hmm. know, encapsulated. But I like how they kind of trick him with a little sword to distract them a bit.
I think it was well done. I didn't care for it. It was kind of gross, but you know.
Yeah, it is gross.
I love the, oh, just let me live and I'll help you sort of, you know, ploy. And it took me a little bit to realize that when they're floating in the bubbles and he's like, well, I'm going to make you think you're dying so you'll die, and there is a gap in the ceiling and we're seeing the moon come in. Because I couldn't tell if this was part of the plan or not, but the moon comes in, Rostov turns into the werewolf, which really powers him up, and he's able to leap out of the magic bubble he's trapped in and attack the evil one.
And that was just enough for him to lose concentration where everyone else kind of gets freed from their little energy bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going after the book while the werewolf's kind of distracted. But actually, Jennifer kind of takes a shot at him to distract him where they're basically having a magical powers battle.
Yeah, they're facing off and they seem to be evenly matched because they're kind of blasting each other and it's hitting dead center and kind of neither one's making headway. And the book is almost kind of at the halfway point of the tug of war. But it's on a pedestal, so Travis is able to kind of use that and toss the thing into the air, and I guess they toss it into a fire pit or something?
Yeah, just like, looks like a little cauldron of fire. I don't know what that is. Are we on a like a volcano or something, I guess?
I think we're inside a cave in a volcano.
That's what I'm thinking too, like Mordor, something like that.
This could have been a little clearer in the storytelling, because the book seems to be destroyed. The evil one powers down back to his kind of golem kind of state he was in when we first encountered him way back when. The group gets out of the volcano before it erupts. But Travis is like, well, why didn't you destroy that thing? And Jennifer's like, well, you can't destroy it. It'll always exist in one form or another. It's evil. So did they not destroy the book? But they clearly destroyed the book because it powered the guy down. I was confused.
Yeah. Did the evil essence go into his body? I don't know. Whatever.
They destroyed the connection to the power or the book will come back. I was confused by all of that.
Me too. And I can tell that he was a Tolkien fan, Grell, because, yeah, you had the volcano, you had the little guy who looked like Smeagol.
Yeah, Smeagol was the name I was grasping for.
This is definitely like Mordor.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it was kind of cool because, like, a lot of people, including probably you and I, got impacted by Tolkien's story.
I actually never really was a Tolkien fan. I kind of never really encountered that at the right age, I guess.
I was more of a fan, I read it at a young age, of The Hobbit,
ah.
More so than Lord of the Rings. And then later on in life, I read Lord of the Rings. I'm like, this is okay. But if I might have read it younger, it might have impacted me more.
Interesting. Now, one question I've got for you. When Rostov turns into the werewolf, tackles the evil one and gets blasted, we see him turning back human.
Yes.
Was your take that the moon had passed or that the evil one had blasted the wolf out of him?
I took it that he blasted the wolf essence out of him at that point.
That was kind of my take, yeah.
Like, he changed him back to a human, like, oh, is he cured? That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so that's something they need to address next issue.
Exactly, because that's what I was going for, but they didn't say anything, and I didn't read ahead because I didn't want to spoil it and have it ruined for our next recording.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm curious. I'm like, did the evil one actually cure him and do something good? To save himself actually did something good.
Yeah, I'm curious about that too. This one ends with the word end, so I mean, obviously we're getting another issue, but this arc is done. If they wanted to, they could pick up next issue in the present day. I hope they kind of stay at this point and figure out who goes where and why. Maybe having another adventure back here. I don't know. But I thought these four issues flowed well together. Each had enough in it to be satisfying, and the overall story was pretty good.
Yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed this so much more than our last four issues. This was a ton of fun, and this last big meaty issue with all Warlord material kind of like was the capstone and was satisfying. A ton of fun. I had that good feeling that I had before, while at the same time, yeah, the storytelling is starting to change a little bit at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all comics were probably headed in this direction at this point in time.
Yeah, we were starting to get continuing stories over in New Teen Titans. I mean, there were certainly the Dunham ones as well, but you would have stuff that would go for a couple issues. So multi-part stories were not uncommon, but they were still satisfying issue reads, not a chapter of a story, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. It seems like now the written for the trade is literally what happens. And so if you pick up part 3 of 6, you really don't know what's going on.
To me, it's the difference between multiple episodes of a TV show building up to a full story versus taking an episode of a TV show and slicing it between the commercial breaks and shipping each individual chunk as an installment.
Yeah, I agree.
It's one thing to watch a Star Trek story that takes 3-4 episodes to play out. It's another thing to see one episode and only get the 7-8 minutes a week, a month. It just doesn't have enough story content to keep the momentum going.
I agree.
So I thought this was a ton of fun. I'm not entirely sure that Aaron really justified his existence in the story, the Centaur guy.
Yeah, he didn't. I don't know why he was there. It was a new character that was introduced, and I thought he'd be kind of cool. They even gave us his name, so I thought, okay, he's going to be a part of the story. But he wasn't even there for the final battle, and it's like, all right, nobody wrote him. Well, Shakira did for a little bit, but I mean, there was nothing that happened of substance.
I mean, he was there, he just didn't do anything. His main purpose in the story seemed to be to get Shakira and Rostov to Mongo's tower in the previous issue.
Yeah, maybe having the lay of the land, and so that the reader didn't question, how in the hell did they know right where to go? in this world that they've never been to, so the centaur knew what was going on.
Yeah, and a line of dialogue could have done that, too.
Yeah. Hey, oh, you're looking for these people. They're over there. Point them in that direction. That's all they needed to do.
And maybe this is all just kind of set up, and we'll get a story more with him involved next issue or something.
Yeah, it did seem like a lot of setup for him, just for him to disappear and be gone.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, don't have a problem with him, but other than that first issue where he was involved in the story, he was just a guide or a plot point.
Yeah.
Again, fun read, fun arc. We definitely are in a different era of storytelling than the series started at. We knew that, not a problem. But I think at least this arc did the storytelling well.
Yeah, I agree. I had fun with this. This was a ton of fun, and I'm happy that the tones of the previous Warlord were there. Just a lot of enjoyment out of the story. It was a ton of fun.
Yeah. Well, and I hope you have a chance to read the Barren Earth backup feature, the three installments and stuff, because we're going to have another 20 of them. And I thought they were kind of fun.
This is a promise that I have for you that I will be reading those again. And it was just timing with some stuff I had going on. But I will go back and reread them. And when we record next time and we have more of it, I will have more to say. And I will even comment on the three issues that I kind of skimmed over.
Not a problem. Again, given the track record of the backup features before, I do not blame you at all. And there does come a point where, I mean, 6-7 pages an issue, it's not much reading. But really, it breaks four issues up into this case, like 8 chunks, each of which has a little bit of a, I could stop here for a little bit, pausing point. It's why I always find going through anthologies to take more time than reading a novel of an equivalent length or whatever.
Yeah.
You're just narratively switching gears so often. But this one, I think, is worth reading, whereas, again, some of the others, I don't know that we'd have missed much if we had skipped them entirely.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. OMAC was really horrendous for me. It was not fun at all.
Yeah, Arak was okay. Arion didn't click with me, which surprised me because I remember enjoying that series. Dragon Sword was fine. Claw wasn't too bad. None of them have been, wow, this was great. This has, I think, been the best of the bunch.
Yeah, so that definitely makes me want to go back and reread.
And again, it stays with the book until the book no longer has backup features.
And that's a promising sign that it went for so long.
Yeah. I would be curious to know, out of this era's backup stories in general, what was kind of the longest lasting of any of them? Because with 23 installments, this would be one of the longer lasting.
This might be it. Yeah, this might have won the award for that longest running backup.
Because I don't remember like how long the Huntress was in the back of Wonder Woman or Firestorm in the back of the Flash or some of those things. It may be that they just finally lucked into the right things on a lot of books at the right time, and those had a similar longevity. I don't remember. So be curious.
Me too.
So if anyone knows, let us know.
Yeah.
Inquiring minds want to know, and I'm too lazy to do the research. Actually, I'm too busy. Got other stuff.
Exactly.
Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.